many dancers say, well, they really had to break out from ballet because it was so constricting, because there's all this technique and there are all these rules. And I always counter that with following the rules and learning the technique gives you the freedom then to express yourself in movement. And actually, some of the best contemporary dancers are really trained in a very firm ballet technique.
Faith at the Fringe, a Sanctuary First podcast series. Uncovering God in the creative arts. At the biggest international arts festival in the world, Sanctuary First stops to ask, where does faith and art meet?
Hello, and we are back for episode number 4 of Faith at the Fringe podcast 2024, coming from the largest arts festival in the world ever. It's got an incredible history, the Edinburgh Festival's Fringe, and here we are. And what are we doing here? We are exploring the crossovers and the integration and the shaping of faith in the fringe, and exploring this incredible space of wonder that art can, it so often creates for us. And in that space and place of wonder, is there faith? Does faith have a role? And how do we as people of faith speak into it? How do we hear from others as well? And hearing from others, we have the wonderful Hannah Sanderson with us again. Hi,
Hello,
Hannah.
Hello, everybody.
Hannah's a good friend of Sanctuary First here. You'll have seen her face many times and heard her voice also many times. And Hannah works as the Programs and Innovation Manager with the Church of Scotland. And on our episode today, we are dancing, aren't we, Hannah?
Yes, we're very excited.
Feet are tapping away under the desk here because we have Paul Burrows with us. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
So to let you know who on earth Paul is and why our feet are dancing feet today, let me explain a little. Paul is a retired Episcopal priest, but that doesn't explain the dancing. Paul is also a member of Prime. Now, Prime is a ballet troupe for the over 60s, is that correct?
Well, not ballet exactly. It's more contemporary dance, but it's a dance troupe for the over 60s, yeah.
So that's going in part way to explaining why our feet are dancing today. So that's one part of it. One part is Prime. But Paul, you also brought a fantastic show to the Fringe called Ash Wednesday, which 100% involves dancing, doesn't it?
It does indeed. Dancing to spoken word, not to music.
And what spoken word do you dance to?
To a poem by T.S. Eliot, published in 1930, Ash Wednesday, and it's really the story of his conversion to the Anglican faith.
So we are going to get really involved in our discussion here, and we've got lots of good thoughts, I think, forming already, I'm sure, because how does an Anglican priest get into dancing?
Well, for 34 years of my ministry, I was living in the United States, working in the Episcopal Church there. And part of their structure involves people mid-career going away for a reassessment, a conference. It's called Credo. And during that, one of the things we work on is what's called the BHAG, the Big Audacious Hairy Goal. And to my surprise, I came up with take ballet lessons. And so I did. I was living in San Francisco at the time, and there was a wonderful studio run by a man called Richard Gibson that did ballet classes for complete beginners, especially adults, older people. You had to sign up for 3 months and pay in advance and commit to 2 classes a week. And I did, and I was hooked. And that was the beginning of a dance career.
That is absolutely amazing. I think never mind the clergy, every church member, all of us, we should have this, what did you call it? The big...
Audacious, hairy goal.
I think it's big, hairy, audacious, BHAG. So big, hairy, audacious goal.
And I love that it was ballet that yes, was yours. I mean, it's unusual, would you say?
I would think it's possibly even unique.
So did you continue to practice as a priest while you were also doing your performances and your ballet? And
when I started, yes. Yeah, I was taking classes in the evening and had to juggle schedules to keep up with it. And something that happened while I was living in the States was there used to be an adult dance camp called Sun King Dance. Unfortunately, no longer operates. So I signed up for that. So a week of my vacation every year was spent in Richmond, Virginia, in the United States, with a bunch of people of similar age who were all mad about ballet.
Wow. And are there many Anglican priests who are involved in dancing?
There are some. In the United States, I know of at least three. Here in Scotland, I haven't come across anybody yet, but I'm recruiting.
You are recruiting. So we will just put the link in the edit for you. So everybody, if you are involved, wanting to get involved with dancing, then Paul is your person. He is your dancer, I think.
I think so, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm going to jump in because I've already got 1,000 questions. So for you, where are the parallels between dance and being a priest?
So obviously I've had plenty of time to consider this and think about it. The discipline of the spiritual life, there's a lot of plodding along, a lot of learning technique. Some people love centering prayer, some people like to read the Psalms, some people do all sorts of things, labyrinths, all those sorts of things. So learning technique is a part of it. But eventually you have to give up on the technique and just let it happen. Well, dancing is exactly like that. You have to spend ages learning technique, working at the bar, working in the center, learning the steps, learning how to do things. But at the end of it, if you're going to perform, you just let go and perform.
That's really interesting because I must admit one of my questions, pre-prepared audience, was that you mentioned about careful choreography for points in the liturgy.
Oh, yes.
You use a phrase, demanding standard of worship. But then at the end, you say this thing about letting go and you say this thing about... that for both prayer and for movement and dance, it's a way to be free. And so I was just interested in that juxtaposition between a careful, crafted, learnt choreography and how that partners with this sense of letting go and this sense of liberty. But I think you've really outlined there in your answer there how those things work together.
There is a phrase that dancers use a lot, muscle memory. And I think that's true of the spiritual life as well. It's a muscle memory. You know, St. Paul talks about praying constantly. And once you've learned the technique, you find yourself in a state of dialogue with God all the time. Mm-hmm. Without thinking about it, without a sort of preparation for it.
So can I ask, sorry, Ruth, just settle back, have a cup of tea now. Right, so in your performance of Ash Wednesday, Dancing Ash Wednesday, who's praying? Are you praying with your body movements? Is the narrator using T.S. Eliot's words to pray? Is the watcher praying?
All of them, yes. Of them. I mean, it is... It's a dialogue, but it's also something that involves everybody. The person watching is involved in the act of prayer. Certainly I am, even though I'd be concentrating on making sure I move at the right times and all the rest of it. And the narrator is definitely praying the words. And T.S. Eliot is praying through it because he wrote the words.
And they're sometimes they're not particularly uplifting words. I mean, in the poem Ash Wednesday, a lot of the theme is quite desolate.
It is, yes.
And it obviously there's hope sprinkled through and that comes through it all. So especially when I read it, that first stanza about the eagle, but it's not a strong eagle. It's called an aged eagle. And I'm kind of going, why did you choose this particular poem to set it to dance? And then how do you depict that in your dance?
Okay, so several questions there. Why did I choose this? This has been a poem that has resonated with me since I was a teenager. Like many at school, we were required in English to study poetry. And many of the poets I liked, I don't know why I like them, but I like them. T.S. Eliot, the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock, the Cats poems, the Wasteland, left me cold. I thought, why are we reading this? And then it came to Ash Wednesday, and suddenly I got it. And went back to all those other poems and thought, well, there's a lot in this. But Ash Wednesday has stayed with me since and been part of my own spiritual journey. So that's why I chose it. What was the other question?
Well, she asked how you're going to portray it.
Oh, how am I going to portray it?
I wasn't sure whether she's specifically talking about the aged eagle.
Well, you'll have to come and see.
Nicely done.
I like it. That is good. Well, I was, when I was reading through the poem, I did think, how do you set this to dance in that? Well, it sounds to me what you're saying is your dance is an expression of worship. It's a way of living as a person of faith. So how did you bring it all in together?
This brings in a lot of the imagery from the poem. It brings in a lot of my own personal experience of living a life of faith. And mainly it's to do with being a gay man in the Christian tradition and how I work that out. And I think that's possibly why so many of the aspects of the poem speak to me. Mm-hmm.
When I'm always going macro. So when you're dancing, I'm going to presume that you experience God in some way. You feel a closeness to God or some form of connection to God. Do you experience that the same as when you are not dancing? So if you were perhaps leading a service or you were using another form of prayer or another spiritual discipline, is the connection the same or does dance give you something unique?
I think in a way I would actually have to say that all those things you suggest are always dancing. I mean, the liturgy itself is a dance because you're using your body and movement to express a relationship with God. Even in silent prayer and sitting silently, you don't stop moving. It's still a movement. So yes, they're all part. Dance is part of prayer, in my personal view.
Yeah. So thinking about if we were in the audience of Ash Wednesday, what is your hope that we would take away? What do you hope that we would take away from the dance with the spoken word?
I think everybody will take away something different. The choreographer I worked with to produce this said to me once, she's a poet, Katie Ailes, said, once a poem is written, once it's published, it's no longer the property of the poet because everybody will take something from it. And that's like this dance piece. People will take from it what they will. My hope is that it will reach into something in them that speaks to them of a relationship with God.
And do you think that's in part with the movement? So when you're talking about reaching in and finding that in relationship with God, are you hoping that comes through the movement
and the words, my guess is you're going to say everything together.
Everything. Yes.
Because it's really, it's quite unique. You mentioned being unique before, which of course you are. And it's quite a unique thought as well, that it's a form of mission in that sense, and it's a form of sharing faith that people can engage with through dance and poetry. I'm wondering about, is it unique in that sense, in using dance and poetry?
No, I don't think so. I think there have been other examples of people using poetry as a way of dancing. In terms of conveying faith, you know, there's been so much stuff that has gone on over the centuries. And as I said, the liturgy itself is a dance. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, can I just clarify, when we're saying liturgy, what exactly are we talking about? Are you talking about the words in the poem, or are you talking about something else?
No, I'm talking about worship in church.
Right, thank you.
A worship service. Particularly at my end, is that I'm really part very much in the Anglo-Catholic wing of the church, of the Episcopal Church. So that's very much about movement, so music, movement, all those sensory things that are going on are part of the worship experience. But I think that's true even of more informal evangelical services. We look for movement and for things that are stimulating our relation, again, our sense of God's presence.
And our senses, isn't it? I mean, it's the full tabernacle experience, you know, so we're being stimulated by what we're seeing, we're being stimulated by what we're hearing, smells often, you know, with some might be incense, or it might be other things, you know, and then obviously we have taste, you know, we have the bread and the wine, and in, as you say, more informal settings, we might communal meals, you know, mm-hmm. fellowship meals, these kinds of things, so they're all part of the experience of being together and part of the experience of being human, I think, as well. One of the things that I could be really wrong here. I'm sure we'll get people writing in, people who are like biblical scholars. But my understanding is that, you know, in our translations of the Bible, we've lost some of the physicality behind some of the worship words. So, you know, kind of like hallelujah and other words that are used, particularly in the Psalms, had a physical movement that went along with them. And so our original understanding of worship would have been a much more movement thing, you know, to raise the hands, to kneel, to lie face down in a bow, to, I think I'm right in saying hallelujah means to spin around, or one of them definitely means to spin around. I'll have to get my Hebrew scholarship out of the cupboard. So I think that's, you know, in a sense, Ruth, you've asked whether or not it's a unique thing, but actually in a sense it's a returning, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
To the original.
So it makes me wonder then, if, you know, is our experience of worship, the way that we worship, are we missing something when we're not moving? Or is there something to be added? Is there something more to be experienced in worship when we do bring in movement?
Well, I would certainly agree with that.
He's like, nah, of course.
I mean, you know, one of the reasons I'm drawn to Anglo-Catholic worship is that there is a lot of movement in it. One of my frustrations throughout my ministry has been that all churches, but particularly Western churches, are very very based in the word, very based in this sort of intellectual Christianity. And I think we need to be a little bit more free about that and let go and experience things without having to understand them in quite the way that we seem to have created. There's always that argument, why baptize infants when they don't understand what's happening to them? Well, do we understand what's happening at baptism?
Yeah, it's a really good question. It's a really good point. And I think one of the really good messages I'm hearing from you in our conversations just now is about taking down
barriers and taking down walls that are those boxes that we think in terms of that we've got to have for worship. It's got to look in a certain way or follow a certain order. And you're just about saying, well, why? Asking the question, why? Why are we doing it this way? Why not have that freedom to move? Why not, in amongst the carefully choreographed movement, have a space to move and to breathe and have that kind of rhythm as well? And I just wonder, you know, for folks that have no connection with church at all, I'm just thinking, I wonder if that would appeal quite sensibly to them as well, that there is an order, but there's also that freedom that and the inclusive nature of dancing as well.
I think that's true. I mean, I think some recent studies have shown that young people are more drawn to liturgical, more formal worship in which they participate. So much of worship, again, mainly Western worship, has become very sedentary. We sit and we listen. We are talked to. It's like a performance. And you can see that in some more modern churches. It's sort of like an auditorium. Whereas all those great medieval churches, we know they never had chairs in them. People stood or moved around or went to different places during the liturgy that was going on up at the Holy End. And it was very much more dynamic.
I think that's an interesting thing about liturgy. So as we've described, liturgy is usually a set form of words that's said over again, you know, either in a rhythm that's annual or a rhythm that's daily or anything like that. And I think some people find that very constrictive because they're like, well, how could it possibly be real if the words are pre-written? But the longer that you spend time with people, they explain, I think, that there is a freedom in the rhythm of it, and there is a freedom in within the structure to be able, when something becomes so familiar, for it to be a vehicle for transcendence. Would that be your thoughts on liturgy?
Oh, quite definitely. And in fact, there's a parallel with the dance community. Many dancers say, well, they really had to break out from ballet because it was so constricting, because there's all this technique and there are all these rules. And I always counter that with following the rules and learning the technique gives you the freedom then to express yourself in movement. And actually, some of the best contemporary dancers are really trained in a very firm ballet technique, which they then are able to use to create really quite splendid dance. I don't know whether any of you saw the Gupo Gupo at the festival, the international festival, but that's really based in a very firm technique that gives them then the freedom to be incredibly expressive.
So it's almost like you were saying previously about the term muscle memory.
Yes.
For dancers.
Yeah.
It's almost like we're saying that liturgy can be people's muscle memory, which then allows them the space and the freedom to be able to take that moment into a more sacred space inside themselves.
Exactly. That's where you get the freedom to express the feeling of being in God's presence.
It's lovely. You know, it's just so lovely to hear the freedom to express yourself in God's presence. You just think, yes, this is right and good. And I'm just wondering, if we think about your other show with Prime, how do you bring that freedom to express yourself and encourage others to have that freedom of expression as well in that show?
Well, so I would encourage everybody to come and see Timeless at Dance Base at 3:50 every afternoon until Sunday. So we're dancing two pieces. One is really seems quite off the wall, a punk dance to Age, which has us all dressed up in punk costumes, doing what appear random dance movements, but in fact it's very choreographed and very, very, very technical in all the movements. but it comes across as joyous. And it is joyous for us who are dancing it. And then we do another piece, which is a series of duets, which express how people are in relationship with each other. Mm-hmm. Again, very moving, very powerful, but says something about the human condition and how we have to work at being in relationship with each other, which of course, again, one of my spirituality teachers years ago said, the way in which we learn how to be in relationship with God is by being in relationship with each other.
Mm, I wonder whether there's a parallel there of muscle memory.
Yeah, I think there is, yes.
We do, there are certain disciplines to relationship that we do because we know that the benefit is there. There are disciplines of attention. There are disciplines of forgiveness. There are disciplines of closeness, if that's the language of your partner. And I suppose we can mirror that, can't we, onto the spiritual disciplines, the disciplines of prayer, the disciplines of silence, and of worship. They definitely have their parallels, which we therefore see in the word of, you know, Jesus being described as the bridegroom, and so we definitely see those analogies through it all. As we have had a plug for Timeless by Prime, am I right in saying that Dancing Ash Wednesday is just the one performance on Tuesday the 13th?
It is just the one off, yes.
So Tuesday the 13th, people, get down to Old St. Paul's Church on Jeffrey Street, starting at 1:15?
1:15, yes.
And that's part of the Edinburgh Sacred Arts Festival. Have I said that right?
Edinburgh Festival of Sacred Arts.
Oh, yeah. Wrong way around.
Yeah, but you had all the words right. Then you just had that freedom to express them
exactly
in the way that you wanted to move them around. Paul, it's been really wonderful having you here and talk just on such a wide range of areas, but actually all centered on that relationship with God and how that is expressed through us in a way that's through muscle memory with the liturgy, and also the freedom of expression. And I really appreciated you talking about the joy as well in that, in your other performance with Timeless. You know, you just think that's so right. There is so much joy that's released in dance as well. Hannah, do you have a takeaway thought, takeaway sentence from our conversation with Paul today?
Well, considering as we used it across three separate topics, I think muscle memory is going to be the takeaway for me. As I said, I personally find it difficult to connect with liturgy. That's not where I feel comfortable in expression of worship. So I think, you know, as we all learn from our betters and from our elders, there must be something in it because so many people love it. So I'm definitely going to go away and have a look at that. And I'm also really fascinated. I'm going to see if I can get a ticket for the 13th, because I would really love to see an outworking of, you know, having heard your heart and your background, to be able to see the fruit of that, I think will help me understand the story even more. So,
yeah, I have to say it's been fascinating to hear about that careful choreography. I've said it twice, I've got it done well.
To say that word.
And the freedom, you know, bringing those two together and seeing how that just influences and affects society, because that's what I'm hearing from you about how your expression through dance is and that act of worship, it's affecting not only the church life, but actually it does bring something different, a different dynamic of movement, a dynamic movement into society as well, and how that has a wonderful place then for faith at the fringe.
Thank you.
Yeah, so thank you very much, and thank you, Hannah. And thank you all to you for joining us again on the Faith at the Fringe podcasts. That was with Paul Burrows, and we will pop all the details, all the links of his shows into our description so that you can come and hopefully get a seat alongside Hannah on the 13th of August. So thank you very much, folks.